this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Denny Johnson and Pete Huber from Jokers Wild. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is January 31st, 2015, and I'm talking with two members of Jokers Wild, Denny Johnson and Pete Huber. Let's start out by getting your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please. Denny.
Denny Johnson. Actually, it's Dennis Lester Johnson, hometown Minneapolis, born October 11th, 1943.
And Pete?
Pete Huber. Peter Henry Huber, actually. In fact, when I first started, I used the name Henry for some reason, thinking that would be awfully cool. I'm from Bloomington, Minnesota. Was born March 15th, 1947.
What part of town did you grow up in? Where did you go to high school? And what year did you graduate?
I grew up in Minneapolis, actually a lot of areas of it. I spent most of my time in North Minneapolis. I graduated from Henry High School in 62.
Pete?
I grew up in Bloomington and went to school in Richfield with Dick and Larry Wiegand from the Ravons. We were in grade school together, and then I graduated from Benilde High School in 1965.
And when did you first become interested in music?
I first became interested in music back in probably in the 50s. I liked Elvis and Ricky Nelson back then. Gradually that went on to meeting Donnie Larson and knowing the Underbeats in their early stages, and that's when I got started in music.
And Pete?
Oh, I loved live music all through high school. Would go frequently to see the Underbeats, the Accents, the Trashmen, Gregory D and the Ivanis, Mike Wagner and the Bops. We'd go to Danceland, Mr. Lucky's, in the Bloomington KC Hall. And I got really hooked on performing after seeing the Beatles live on Ed Sullivan. It did something to me. 22 days later, I had my first drum set. And it came with cowhide skins and two 22-inch cymbals. So I had an awesome set for a first set.
Where did you obtain your first drum set?
Oh, boy. A music store on Lindale Avenue and Old Shakopee Road in Bloomington.
Do you recall the cost?
I think it was $350.
Do you recall the name, the brand name?
Oh, yeah. It was a Gretsch set, and I bought it from a gentleman named Elliot Fine, a brother to Milo from Park Music.
Do you still have the set?
I do not.
Do you wish you still had the set?
I do. That would be worth a fortune nowadays.
And Denny, do you recall the first musical instrument you purchased?
First one I bought would be a Harmony flat-top guitar I got in June of like 64. That I don't remember where I bought it, but it was real cheap. And my first bass I bought in mid-December of 1964, and I got that at a music store on the corner of Cedar and East Lake Street.
Okay, let's talk about bands. When did you put your first band together?
The first band I put together was with Doug Jurdy, John Klein, and Cliff Heinch, and that was in Mississippi Courts back in early 65. It was probably like March, April of 65. We got together and we used to practice at Doug's house because that's where the piano was and that's what he played. So I used to bring my basement amp over there, which I bought from Jim Lopez, which was a treat and a quarter buying stuff from him. And we had three guitars, actually two guitars and a bass out of the same amp. But it was okay at that time because we played at such low volume, sitting in somebody's living room. You didn't need anything to really blast. And that was kind of my first band.
Did that band have a name?
No, never did get a name.
And what kind of music did that band play?
We were just stumbling with songs that we learned off the radio that were out. And mostly three-chord songs back then. So if you had a D, and an E, you could play a song.
All right, how about you, Pete? Your first band.
Sounds pretty similar to Denny's experience. I partnered up with my two best friends in high school. In fact, that's how I got started. They were guitar players and said, we need you in the band and we need a drummer. So the choices were obvious.
What were their names?
Their names were Wayne Hansen and Ted Cooey. And we formed a band called the Rugbees. We played a lot of songs where there was no singing involved. or very simple three-chord progression songs with one of the fellows in the group, Wayne Hansen, could sing a little bit. A few months after that, I got in a band called the Grammys, and they were with some of Ted Cooey's friends from South High School in South Minneapolis.
When, what kind of music did the Grammys play?
Boy, a lot of the three-chord progression, simpler songs, any Beach Boys songs that had minimal vocals, a lot of Rolling Stones song, and easy Beatles songs.
Did the Grammys actually play live for the
public? Yeah, we played a lot of frat parties at the University of Minnesota, and a lot of apartments that had party rooms. We seemed to get in with a college group that we played a lot for.
Now, I believe Grammys is a surf term. Do you mind explaining what that means?
I think Grammys is a derogatory word aimed at someone that wishes they were a surfer, and that we thought fit us well here in Minnesota.
Is that kind of like a poser?
Yeah.
He's a poser.
Similar, but not quite the same. Yes.
Who thought up the name for the band?
Jim Larkin.
And Pete, who was in the Grammys and who played what?
We had a lead guitar player from De La Salle High School named Jim Belayo. We had two guys from Southwest High School, Tom Kane, who played bass, and Jim Larkin, who played rhythm guitar. And Jim Larkin did most of our singing.
And Denny, what happens next in your musical career?
Next, I get a call from Dave Wagner. It was October of 1965, and said that he was starting a new band and needed a bass player, and he gave me the job. I said, well, I'm not that great of a bass player. I haven't been playing that long. Are you sure you want me? And he says, I want you. You're my bass player. That's what happened next.
How did Dave Wagner know you were a bass player?
We were neighbors, and I used to go hear the aardvarks practice in Gene Balaban's living room up at his parents' house, and I used to watch the band there, and he was my neighbor, so he knew that I had gotten a guitar and that I had been practicing for a while and trying to put together something, so that's where it went, and I thank him thousands to this day.
Now, this is the aardvarks who turned into the He Twos, correct?
Yes.
All right. So did you audition for...
I never auditioned at all. I just had the job. And what it was the He Twos and Aardvarks, or the Aardvarks He Twos / were breaking up, and they were starting a new band. And the new band that was going to be formed was going to be with Gene Balaban, their lead guitar player from the Aardvarks and He Twos, and Dave Wagner, the bass player. But Dave didn't want to play bass. He wanted to play keyboards and sing. So we started out with Dave playing Farfisa organ and singing, Gene Balaban on lead guitar and vocals, and myself on bass and backing vocals. And we needed a drummer, so we ended up going over to the Ritz Theater in Northeast Minneapolis. That's where David Anthony walked her, or David Anthony had the place rented, and he used to have bands trying out over there all the time and playing, and you get up on stage, and that was the thing that he had back then. He wanted all bands to feel like they're performing in front of people, so that you were up on stage in front of this large auditorium with chairs out there that anybody could just drop in and listen to the bands. And we went over there, and we ran into Pete Huber. And Pete Huber said that he was in a band that just broke up called the Grammys, and he was looking for a band, and we were looking for a drummer. So we said, how about next week we get together? And I believe you came over the next week during some evening, and we got together and liked it. And that's where it ended up at that point, being a four-piece band. So it would be Dave Wagner on vocals and keyboards, Gene Balaban guitar and vocals, myself on bass and background vocals, and Pete Huber on drums and background vocals. That went on for a few weeks.
Pete, do you recall that day at the Ritz Theater?
I do. I was between bands because Jim Larkin was filling in for Lonnie Knight with the Ravons. Lonnie had gone to Detroit with his parents to finish his senior year of high school there, and was planning to return to the Twin Cities. In the meantime, the Grammys had come apart because Jim Larkin was gone. So I was there with the Ravons, and that's where they introduced me to Dave Wagner.
Where did the new band practice?
The new band practiced at my house, 3455 Logan Avenue North in Minneapolis.
What kind of music did the new band rehearse?
The new band had a lot of easy songs, a lot of three-chord songs, and a lot of easy Stone stuff. Dave Wagner liked the Stones.
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Paul Revere and the Raiders, yep.
What happened next with the new band?
3 weeks later down the road, Dave Wagner decided he did not want to play keyboards and sing. He just wanted to be a front man, out in front lead singer. So that meant we needed another person. I remembered a person that I tried out with he was playing in the band The Cavaliers. It was Dave Middlemist. He was a guitar player, keyboard player, and did some vocals. So I called him up and asked him if he would come over and try out to be our fifth member. And he came over, and it clicked, and everything went well. So he played Dave's Farfisa. He played his own rhythm guitar, and he sang background vocals. And at that point, we'd said, yes, this is the band, and that was it.
Pete, do you recall the very first live job that this band plays, and do they play it under what name?
Well, I had a commitment for the Grammys to play at Ferrara's Ballroom, and no band to play it. So this new band with these folks and myself went there and played under the name The New Grammys at Ferrara's.
Where was that located?
That was located on Central and East Hennepin.
That's by the U of M?
In the U of M area, a little north of there, but yes.
Pete, what do you recall about the very first job with the new Grammys?
Carrying the equipment up many, many flights of stairs. And we were both nervous and excited to have an opportunity to really be out and performing and getting paid for it. So it was a great first start for us.
Danny, what do you recall about the first job with the new Grammys?
I remember being scared to death. You know, I've never played in the public before in front of people, and I stood behind my amp the first hour, and everybody's laughing at me and Dave Wagner says, you know, you can come out now, you can stand out here. And I said, I'm pretty comfortable back here. And then finally I did end up walking out in front, and after that it took over. I got used to it, and I had a lot of fun.
I believe there's a word for that, and it's called stage fright.
You got it. I had it.
Give us an idea of some of the songs the Cordon Blues would have played.
The Cordon Blues would have done things like Night Before by the Beatles, Last Time by the Stones, some R&B tunes like Turn On Your Love Light, Bobby Blue Bland, Can I Get a Witness by Marvin Gaye, things like that.
All right, and what happens next after the Cordon Blues?
After the Cordon Blues, we said we needed a name for ourselves, so we got our picture taken, and we tried to have that rugged look. Volante took this picture of us along this wall, and we tried to have the rugged look because back then nobody smiled in pictures. It was that, so all of a sudden, somebody said the Scoundrels, and we had that name for probably a couple of weeks. After that, it was probably early spring of 66, and Dave Wagner was playing cards at a party with Donnie Larson and a few other people, and Donnie says, Dave, you ought to call your band Joker's Wild. I think that'd be a great name. So Dave comes back to the band practice the next week and says, we were playing cards the other night, and Donnie says, Joker's Wild. No the, just Joker's Wild would be a great name for you guys. So we're the Scoundrels, and we went from the Scoundrels to Joker's Wild, and everybody approved the name and liked it, and right after that, we approached Dave Anthony. We'd had enough songs together. He'd heard us and talked to us. Well, he had talked to us at the Ritz Theater a long time ago and says, when you guys get together and you get enough songs and things like that, come and see me, and I got a lot of jobs out there. I can get you guys booked. So we went back to Dave and Anthony, and we had the name Joker's Wild. We had a song list, and he came out to hear us at my house and signed us up, and we played a lot of jobs for him.
Pete, what did you think of the name Joker's Wild?
Oh, I like the name, and I have a memory of us playing at the Ritz. In my mind, that's where I really felt the pressure of Dave and Anthony sitting in the audience. Boy, I was just scared to death because he was there. But
was that the audition?
I don't think it was the audition, but I think it was a few weeks later. The Underbeats and various other bands that I really looked up to were out there, and this was my first time in a situation where they were listening to me play.
So now you're playing for your peers.
Yes, on a Sunday afternoon with no other audience there. Yes, that was, to me, just a high-pressure moment.
The heat is on.
Yeah, but it went well.
So, Pete, when you signed on with David Anthony Productions, I assume he had plenty of jobs for the band, correct?
Yes, Dave had us working a lot in the five-state area. He had us in teen clubs, ballrooms, and armories throughout the whole five-state area. And we were just constantly on the road. It was not uncommon to play a night in Duluth, followed by a night in Des Moines, followed by a night in Fargo.
What did you have for a band vehicle at that time?
When we first started out, we had a 1957 Chevy pulling a trailer. That was mine. I had a 57 Chevy station wagon.
So you had to rent a trailer?
No, I think Dave Wagner bought a trailer, or it was the Aardvark's trailer. Uh-huh. We got the Aardvark's trailer, and we were hauling our equipment in that, plus we had the station wagon, which I owned, because nobody had a car big enough for, you know, five guys to get into with their equipment and go. So that's what we drove until that thing blew up.
So you're putting on the miles, Pete.
Putting on the miles. And it was hard miles. Those were the days before FM radio and air conditioning. So you put five guys in a vehicle with your equipment, with your clothes, and occasionally we had someone along from either Dave and Anthony or someone to support us with our band equipment. It was tight quarters.
How does that work in, let's say, January when you're booked in Duluth?
Leave early. You know, we had a motto that we, and we kind of joked about it, we always used the word professionalism. You know, as young kids, professionalism was just a big deal for us. We tried to be professional. And one thing that we thought was terribly important was always being there on time, and actually behaving when we got there. We looked pretty scruffy. We had the long hair and the boots and the radical clothing, but our behavior was always impeccable when we were in the ballroom or the presence of the ballroom owners.
So did having long hair ever result in problems?
Yes. Many a times after we'd left jobs and on our way back, we'd stop at a truck stop and go in there to have, let's say, something to eat or get a Coke or something. And there'd always be like truck drivers in there. And I remember one time when we were out by Wilmer, I don't know, Pete, if you can remember this, but they went out to get motor oil and a scissors. They were going to cut our hair and grease it back. And we jumped out of there real fast. But you always got a lot of crap from those places. Late night truck stops, you did.
Did you get used to that, Pete?
Never quite got used to it, but we did our best to work around it.
Did Dave and Anthony ever have the band Jokers Wild open up for any national acts?
Yes. We opened up for the Shadows of Night at Approaches Ballroom in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. We met the band, hung out with them for a while. It was great. I remember Pete had some good memories about Tom Shafour, the drummer.
Yes, the drummer was awesome. And in the early fall of 66, they had a hit, Gloria.
It was a huge hit.
It was a cover of Van Morrison's song, and it was really exciting to play with someone that had music on the radio at the time.
I would assume that opening up for a band with a gigantic hit like Gloria must have been a big deal for Jokers Wild.
Playing with them was great, but playing for a crowd as big as they brought was even greater.
They packed out the ballroom?
Yes.
Did you guys get a percent of the door ever?
That wasn't back then. Back then, I think we did those jobs for like 100 and a quarter, $125 as opening act, five guys.
And what happens next in the life of Jokers Wild?
Well, right around October 66, Gene Balaban decides to leave the band because he had finished his schooling and he had plans to get married. So we were starting to have tryouts for a new lead guitar player to replace him. And Bill Jordan was hired after the auditions because Bill's father had played with Mike Wagner's father. And Dave Wagner, Mike Wagner, it all come together. And he was recommended to play with us. And he was actually the best out of the ones that we tried out back then.
And what happens next with Jokers Wild?
Late January 1967, Dave Wagner announces to the band that him and Kink Middlemist will be leaving the band to join a new band that David Anthony is putting together with three members of the Ravons, which would have been Larry Wiegand, Dick Wiegand, and Harry Nils. So that left two broken bands there, but formed one other band. So we needed members to complete ours, so we needed a lead singer. And I thought, well, Lonnie Knight was the only one left over from the Ravons. We'll give him a call and see if he wants to come over and be our new lead singer. So I contacted him, and Lonnie was going to come over and try out with us. And then we needed also a keyboard player. And I knew of the Illusions, which was a band from North Minneapolis also that rehearsed not too far from my old house. And I went down there to check them out one night and listen to them. And I heard Greg Springer, because I heard he was a good keyboard player and singer. When the band was on break, I went up to him and asked him if he would come down the next week and talk to us or try out with us. He said he was interested, so he came down, and he ended up being our fifth member. So we were back to five people again.
Was there a change in the style of the music at this time, Pete?
Yeah, we went further into the psychedelic music, and we started bringing with us kind of an elaborate light show with projectors, a strobe light, and we would bring dry ice and water to create a fog effect. We also had ultraviolet lights and invisible ink, and this was new for most of the people that saw us. If you're in the big cities like Minneapolis, you could go to Magoo's, or if you're on the East and West Coast, this was really popular. But in the Midwest, the audiences had never seen anything like this. So this was truly a new thing for them to see.
Now, this light show, was this something you bought, or did you have to build it yourself?
Well, we actually made the strobe light ourselves.
Pete and I built most of the stuff in my basement. We did our light boxes down there, and Pete came up with all the controllers and switches and actually used high-beam switches from trucks and cars to handle the power for the lights. The strobe light was built out of a metal box. I remember we cut a hole in it and had a wheel in it, and we put a rotating motor in there that would spin around, and we had this bright light in there that would, you know, at a certain speed would have that.
And it was primitive. But it was so novel that no one, you know, the electronic ones just weren't seen yet in the Midwest.
Were other bands using strobe lights and light shows?
Oh, no, nothing at all at that point in time anyway.
And what would be some of the songs that the band would have been doing at this time period?
Well, we did stuff from Buffalo Springfield, like For What It's Worth. We wrote a lot of our own things. We had All I See Is You, which was kind of like our little psychedelic song that we had out on a 45 at that time, or we're just getting ready to record the 45 at that time. We did 7 and 7 by Love, that did a lot of high-powered psychedelic stuff. Let's Spend the Night Together by the Rolling Stones. We did Jefferson Airplane, Somebody to Love.